Welcome to the Humanist Union meeting for July. And our discussion today is on Peter Anderson's morning presentation. I don't know if it was mentioned to you, Peter, but due to human error, your program this morning was not recorded.
Oh.
So if you want to briefly summarize it before our discussion, that'd be fine.
Sure. And this one is working.
Yes.
The program committee met about 2 months ago, and someone said, well, July 4th is coming, we should have a July 4th talk. And I said, this is prairie, we don't do conventional stuff, we should, I said, people said, what should we do? I said, well, how about Jefferson's contradictions? And that's how the talks, when people said, who's going to do it? And I said, well, I don't know. So I said, okay, I'll do it. But I have, I went through two transformations in my life from a normal liberal style of life. One, as I was telling Bob, is that about 20 years ago, I was invited to speak at a meeting. There's a whole environmental justice movement that started in the early 70s in the U.S. With the point of talking about those who are on the front line on the front lines of all these industrial processes which are terribly polluting and killing, and we keep out of sight. And at this meeting was the leaders of the actual indigenous leaders in Cancer Alley in Louisiana, on the front lines, whose families, most of almost, actually all of them were women, and all of them were black, whose families live on the factory front lines and are suffering all kinds of terrible illnesses. And what really impressed itself on me meeting with those people from my lily liberal middle class life that I had lived is the nobility of these women that I don't think I could have summoned. When you think about it, if your kids were afflicted, your parents were afflicted in the way they were afflicted, I would be screaming and foaming at the mouth. I'd have a gun in my hand. And so I was so impressed with them. And that made a big impact. And then the other thing is, you talk about, you think, I do a lot of work on climate change. And when you do the numbers, the whole approach we're taking at the best America puts forward is that we're gonna make a big sacrifice. We're gonna live the same way we do today. Only thing is we'll do it in LEED houses that are 2,000-3,000 feet. And the problem with that is to have it, and it might work if we could cut our footprint in half. It's hard to say if the whole world were confined to the shores of the United States, but the world is not confined to our shores, and China's people are not living a middle-class life. And they're not, or India, and they're not going to accept a world where you define the only thing required to do is to be more efficient living in your splendor. The way that works out in terms of the numbers is, in terms of the way we like to look upon a climate action plan, is you reduce, every country reduces the amount of emissions of carbon to what it was in 1990, or cut it back by 10%. And if you do that, China starts with its 1990 emissions were almost nothing, to cut it back. Essentially, it would consign its peasants to be peasants for the rest for eternity. Well, we're living in LEED McMansions. They're not going to buy into that. So those are the things that worked in my mind as I thought about this Jefferson thing. And what I was talking about today is that miraculous, the life he lived and all the inventions, and when you think about it in that, when you look at through narrow horse blinders and look upon it in terms of all the things that sprung forth from that one person's mind and the things that he assembled, that's one view of the world. But then you think about how he afforded all that, you slice it the other way, then it's a very terrible vision. And the sad thing about it is it's the vision that also describes our lives a little bit differently, because our slaves are not in our basement. They're in Louisiana, they're in Nigeria, they're all over the world, all of them out of sight. And the thing I was trying to convey is I was not trying to preach shaking a finger. It's the same problem I have in my family, trying to figure out what to do. And it's not productive, I don't think, in terms of social change, to go and preach to people and say, I'm doing it right, you're doing it wrong, you better change. It's still no more than the fire, you know, it's a liberal form of fire and brimstone. It doesn't sell too well. It's more productive, I think, to try and understand what's going on. So I was talking to Rick, I'm trying to remember the guy's name. It was in the Depression, it was a very famous guy from Chicago who got, was head of the Public Service Commission. And then he said,
Saul Alinsky?
No, that's the organizer. And then he became head of the Tennessee Valley Authority. He was a very strong progressive. And then he became head of the Atomic Energy Commission. And he has written a story. He wrote his memoirs every day of his life from a young adult. And you read his first volume, he describes it very interestingly. He's in a street in Chicago. There was a puddle, and there was a big crowd around it. And there was a mouse struggling. Everyone was beating up on the mouse. And he was writing how terrible it was in terms of social justice, even for that mouse. By volume 7, he had become a more elderly, my age, and he was at that point consulting for the oil companies. He was writing about how those goddamn environmentalists. And I worry for myself. We get so accustomed to our comforts. And so unless it's something physically forcing change right over our head, like a crisis, like a war, we don't seem to react, none of us seem to react in a way commensurate with the challenge that we are faced with. And so for me and my struggle is to figure out how do you find out what, because everything in this, at this level is really is what kind of primal taproots you're aiming to affect. It's not something which is going to be changed by intellectual discourse. And I try to say, how do you get some sense of hope here? I think of what has happened in my lifetime. I was born in 1947. I never thought I always thought growing up that social change was a centuries-long process. But I need to think, my godmother worked in the State Department in the 50s, and she would go out with people who were gay to give them cover so they wouldn't be fired and sometimes arrested. And you think what's happened to gay rights? In just a short space of 40 years, or women's rights, or animal rights. So things do change in a very primal level, and the real challenge I feel for us is to figure out, recognizing that it's not going to be an intellectual transformation, was how do you impact people? And I think our habits of our hearts are so hard to change because we're so accustomed for so many years to living with our air conditioners and our cars and all this and all that. Maybe it's going to be from the youth, but we need to really focus on first educating ourselves that the magnitude of the change that has to occur for society, kind of civilizations we've known to sustain themselves, because they can crumble. So the near of civilization is looking at what happened to Germany, which was a citadel of culture in the 20s, how fast it can crumble under stress.
I have a couple points.
Sure.
We have great obesity in our country and amongst everybody, every age, every culture. And that's one part of this. And part of it is that we buy much too much meat. We eat much too much sugar. And if you go back to the fact that the hunters and gatherers didn't have any of that. They were healthier people. And around the globe, people who live subsistence living live longer generally. And if we went back to what we were structured physically to do, that would help cut down on our expenses and our luxuries quite a bit, I think.
Well,
because
so
it's health-wise, it's better for us.
But what I want to put out to think about is, I mean, they talk about these as slices, about how what kind of slices will change our environmental footprint. And most 99% of the discussion is which should be a slice, how much a slice is. But the better question, the more urgent question, is how to get any slice adopted that reaches to the extent we have to reach. In other words, that makes it possible for people in China like when George Bush Sr. went to the Rio conference, the first Rio conference on climate change in 1992, he said something which was terribly telling. I do not intend to negotiate the American way of life. And to be fair to him, can anyone get elected? Democrat or Republican, who's going to say or act any way differently? So how do you, the bigger question I want to put on the table is not what slices should we talk about, and meat and red meat are all those wonderfully important things. Is how do you get the change to happen, not what the particular components of change are. So in that case, we're inculcated to like sugar, to get a high on sugar and a high on fat, and McDonald's have all these testing labs to exploit that to the max. And say, when you have the industry running on all cylinders to exploit that and make it as bad as possible, what do you do to make it the opposite? I mean, so in that case,
how do you change the American way of life?
So I remember, like, smoking when I was a kid. I remember going to the village to watch a play one year in the 50s, and someone next to us started smoking. And a woman in the seat in front of us opened her purse and took out a spray gun and sprayed him in the face. And everyone went, oh my God. But today you wouldn't ever think of smoking indoors. So my point is, we need to think about how you affect those social and social mindset things.
Well, did you put out the fire with this?
Remember what happened to Carter in the White House.
Yeah, yeah.
Putting on a sweater, putting on
solar panels on it, the first thing we're going to do is reverse that. Yeah. Just think what we'd do if they continued that example. Yeah. Well, continuing that example is kind of taking me one of the. Yeah. Going backward. Yeah. I don't know how everybody's familiar with the Rocky Mountain Institute and the Amory Levins. To describe it as a think tank considering scientific and economic and political aspects of climate, among other things. He just recently put out a new book called Reinventing Fire, in which he talks about a real roadmap for getting to total renewable energy except for small amounts of natural gas by 2050. But Amory Levins is a very pragmatic person, and he doesn't talk about they ought to do this, they ought to do that, why don't they do this? He talks to businesses about, look at the trillions of dollars you're going to save if you follow this path. And he talks about tackling problems as a whole in a holistic way. When you're putting on a new roof, that's the time to put on your solar panels, and that's the time to insulate your house. Talks about a combination of personal change, economic change, profit motivated, and political change. All have to work together, education change.
Well, Amory Levins is a genius. And he is someone who's able to make a presentation that is charismatic in its nature. But one thing about Amory Levins I want to point out in terms of my thought to share with you is the savings to industry for having a building that is energy efficient had some traction, but not a lot. And the problem we have in the real world is that the savings from renewables are spread over 10 years. So you don't see them up front, and the way our industrial system is set up, they have a 2-year time horizon for payback at the most, and some have 6 months. But what he did do, which I want to go back to a truth I want to share, is he came back and had a book called Brittle Power, and he talked about the people who are defense nuts. Remember, this is about people who probably have small penises and want people to think they have big penises, so they're going to go defense. And he said, the power structure we have is subject to being destroyed by a couple of, 2 or 3 terrorists could destroy the whole grid system. It's brittle power. We should have more diversified, so we're not. So he basically said, what's the primal language these guys are talking in? So for those, which are probably a majority, who don't have aren't reachable by the numbers, because the social system is distorted. So it's not an everything. He was also thinking about the primal, how to reach people in the primal level. And that's what I thought was really clever. And he had the defense department, you know, working with him and stuff like that.
Some of these are political and what is the best way to ask tax structure to ensure that these paybacks are worth
it? Well, the carbon tax comes to mind.
Which one?
The carbon tax. Yeah.
They just implemented that in Australia.
Well, the Labor government is probably going to lose because of it, but yeah, they did put it in place. But anyway, I'm not arguing how you should think. I'm just saying for myself, I've come to the point that where we need to really think most about is how you get people to want to change substantively in a big way, not just more, and to recognize that it's like World War II. We go every year at the end of the summer to a working dairy farm north of Eau Claire, near a town called Fountain City. And across from the river in Minnesota is a little town of 11,000 called Winona. This little farm town of Winona, which is a beautiful town, has a historical society that's like five times the size of a prairie. Imagine a historical society in a little town like that. And they have a whole corner of the first floor is dedicated to World War II. And it has a big exhibit about with an organization chart of all the volunteer committees there was. When all the men, all the farmers were at war, how are you going to maintain the structure going on? The volunteers are required. And no one said, I'm not going to do this. This is not the American way of life. The war was going on, and you did what you had to do. And when I compare that to the way we live now, I have a friend who's an environmentalist in California. I knew him because he grew up in Racine. And he became quite well financially by trading up. He just worked for a government most of the time, a consultant. But he traded up on land and got quite wealthy. And he bought a ranch in Marin County next to George Lucas's ranch. And built this very splendid house. And then he also built a gazebo, and it wasn't a little gazebo, it was a gazebo with a kitchen and a bathroom. And then he built a second gazebo. Remember, this house was already populated. I said, okay, guy, I'm not sure why you built one gazebo. These are like $40,000 gazebos. But why did you build a second gazebo? And his answer was, because I can. And that's America, because I can.
But did he have to build a second?
Exactly. No, it wasn't any happier. He was probably thinking, maybe I should have three gazebos. Yeah. But the question is, how do you crack that? That's, to me, the real fundamental issue for our time. How do you crack that?
Sociologists are beginning to address these issues and to put a value on things like the environment and like the nurturing part of our economy. I mean, for too long, because it's hard to monetize, to put the value on, it's been ignored, but it's there, and it has value. And economists are beginning to. Rian Eisler wrote The Real Wealth of White Nations, which she talks about, you know, how in Scandinavia, you know, that things are things like childcare are valued and paid for because they have worth.
Well, all through Europe, they monetized, to use this awful language,
yeah,
leisure time, family time,
right,
in a way we don't give any recognition to. So the question I put to you, without knowing the answer, is why is it that they do so there and we don't do so here? What's going on?
I think we're more materialistic here.
Why? That's an outcome. What is going on?
Keep up with the Joneses is a wrong standard. Wall Street is...
I mean, maybe it's because the industry is so much stronger, they put so much advertising in consumption. I mean, I don't. That's the thing. But I think, to me, the process is to figure out with fundamental questions like you're putting, Penny, is why, and inevitably the answer is going to be there's a lot more money there than there is here, and then the question is How do you win with that disparity? I mean, that's the process I think we should have to go through.
You know, the example you gave of how far we've come with the LGBT community, and you know, a lot of people say it has to do with television.
Really?
Yeah. With television shows.
Oh, because they were gay television.
You feel like you actually know a character on a television show.
Interesting.
And it humanizes them. Well, maybe we need Peter the Avenger, Environmental Avenger series, maybe, and you know, Adam Sorkin, who did the West Wing, to do a really riveting.
I would think the change.
Are there any studies that analyze that to see if it's true?
Well,
that's interesting.
Social television programs, government sponsored or education sponsored in Latin America, are making big differences. The soap operas have a message.
What's their message?
Well, it's presumably a helpful message, maybe to just get children to brush their teeth or something, but it's something to convey social messages in the popular.
I think acceptance is much earlier than that, or they wouldn't have had the program done.
Right now, with characters
and their sponsors.
Yeah.
With characters doing things environmentally laudable on too many shows, they're made fun of.
Right, there's stupidity involved.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and that needs to stop, and we need to, I mean, you know, we need to see our favorite housewife of New Jersey sorting her recyclables or something, you know, or hanging her laundry out on the line.
Now, in terms of a process for change, I'm thinking as I listen to you and you, that there was a lot, I remember, and I'll study this, but I remember there was a lot of effort by the black community in the 60s. Where are the black faces? Where 10% of the population, and assuming the Hispanic? I mean, it didn't just happen. Maybe that organizing and threatening of the, you know, the black community threatened to boycott the advertisers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I wonder, is it possible that organizing loosen the straitjacket on what was shown? But we need to figure, my point is, I'm not going to stop everything, but my point is, that's the process that we need to go through, where social change has occurred.
Why has it?
Because there's no, the gay rights, well actually gay rights did have a money thing because it passed, the bill allowing marriage in New York had a lot of rich gay money wisely focused, but generally speaking, the thing to women and to gay was a change that occurred in the last 30 years, despite the fact that at the time it was occurring, there was no money, the money was on the opposite side of the fence. So those are the things, I mean, to me, I would love to talk to you afterwards to figure out if there's any studies about that, the TV, to see, is that theory true? And then how was it that the TV put that on in the first place? It was the sponsors wouldn't never normally
well,
like
true,
it.
Yeah.
But we need to understand how the levers of social change occur, not speculating, but really evaluating.
So we can proceed.
You're familiar with the movement in Sweden, which started with, I actually went to a workshop on this about 5 years ago, and I have books in my big fat file, but I can't remember.
Seven steps
or nine steps or something like that. But it began with one guy in way up in the far north of Sweden. Officially, it probably wasn't Lapland, but almost. Who was a member of a very tiny tribal group who had their own language and their own village, one little village. And he came up with his ideas of basically sustainable living, like we were all talking about, especially energy issues. And saw to it that, because he was influential in this little village, that village adopt this way of living. And they did, and very effectively. And then this spread throughout Sweden, including Stockholm, and a large number of smaller places, from tiny villages to medium-sized towns, who have adopted the same system, where they're doing a very, very, very good job of reducing the waste and the energy, mainly, to an absolute minimum that the technology will allow. And it's working very well, but you don't hear anything about this these days. In all of the, the public television specials, once in a while they're talking about the special energy problems, environmental issues. They never once mentioned this wonderful experiment in Sweden, which is very successful.
Walden 3.
Hmm?
Walden 3.
Walden 3?
No.
No, there's a Walden, and there's someone had a book called, remember Skinner had Walden 2?
What about
Gaviota's,
isn't it?
But see, those, the people willing to do that are 10%.
Very, very practical. I mean, there's no, dreaming at all.
But the people are women in this room.
Specific technologies. They've invented a lot of technologies. Use their smart kids.
Yeah. You're old enough to have seen what the change occurred. What was the reason? What was the levers that got pulled that changed?
Well,
when Molly was a girl, she didn't do any sports. She was dainty. And now our girls, are
Title
trained 9. To be tough and aggressive.
Title IX.
Yeah. Title IX, I think.
But there was a desire for it first.
There was what?
There was a desire for it first.
How did the desire come?
More money to girls'
yeah.
sports.
But I don't know how Title IX managed to be passed. That was back in the days when we were trying to get.
That was only
70s. Passed.
A few people who saw the good sense of it. I mean, women have a lot to contribute to the culture to have changed.
The insanity of taking half the population and consigning them to a dusty kitchen is insane. But how did it happen? How did it become
in fact, in places
we should try and find out.
In places where the men have deserted families and the women are struggling to support their children, it's the women who are getting small loans and starting little businesses
right.
and helping.
And they won't lend to men because they're unreliable.
Because the culture is just not oriented toward really contributing that much, and is contributing. It is in the direction of men having the money power in the family and spending the money on liquor, things like that. It's very non-constructive.
I wonder whether, I remember when Cesar Chavez was organizing the grape workers, he was a terrible organizer, but he had a lot of good vision. And one of his visions was to send grape workers out to visit churches around the country. Remember that? And I didn't belong to any church then, so I don't know if it worked or not. But I wonder, I keep on talking to these environmental justice folks, if those wonderful women from Louisiana would go out to the church where there are members of the board of directors of Goldman Sachs, whether it would maybe not affect the gentlemen, but it would affect the women.
It sounds as though organization is behind what you're looking for. And having certain people be the leaders of that direction.
You should read that book, Barrier Change. It's very inspiring. Just 12 people. Read 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
What's it called?
Just the number of people in this room started the anti-slave trade movement and won. Well, it took 50 years, but they won. And they ultimately had this boycott that got most of the population involved with sugar.
It's going to take 50 years, but I don't know if
what's the name of the book again?
Bury Our Chains.
Bury Our Chains, yeah.
But that's the story of Susan B. Anthony and
who's the other one?
Kate Stanfield. They recognized it was that's a book not for ourselves alone.
Because yeah. mm-hmm.
they died before they saw it.
You look by way of television programming. How would we go about recruiting an environmental edgy bunker?
There we go.
That's the kind of guy that can put it across.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sure. Give Rush Limbaugh some reverse poison.
I'm concerned by talking about television. I'm concerned about the fact, I think, that violence dominates most television programs. Not the ones I watch, because I refuse to watch them. But most of the ones, especially on public, I mean on private television. We don't watch anything except public television, except one program, 60 minutes.
It's the decibel equivalent of sugar, isn't it?
I think violence is a major part of the problem, at least in our country.
I think we like violence because we're bored.
But I consider the threat to the world such that when GM built the state-of-the-art car factory in Lordstown, Ohio in the 70s, it was all automated. So to speak, it's the new future for the American automobile industry. And they looked at the P&L, the profit and losses on it, and it was going down the tubes. And so the Wall Street sent an investigator out to find out what was happening at Lordstown. And the investigator came back to this wood-paneled room with all the investor guys there. And he said, what's going on? He said, well, the guys on the line have nothing to do, so they're shooting up all day. And one of the big investment guys said, geez, who makes the needles? And I say that because time is so tight. I mean, we won't know for 10 or 15 years whether we already have passed the irreversible tipping points on climate. And I am so desperate, if it took manipulating violence, just to exaggerate a point, to primarily reach people to change, I would do that. So for me, I don't worry about the niceties. We are in a desperate straits. We are really in desperate straits. And we have to learn how they're selling toothpaste with sections, learn all those things that are terrible, and see if we can make them work for us, because otherwise we're not going to have any time to make any changes.
For my defense of television, there is this Disney Channel, which has a program that they advertise called Friends for Change, where you can do environmental charity work, and the kid proposes a project, and if they do a good job of proposing a project, Disney will give them like $1,000 to do the project. So.
You've got to wonder, is this greenwashing up?
You also have change.org where you can start a petition.
Yep.
That's on television.
But the bigger thing, you know, compared to Penny, I think it was Penny's comment that when they have an environmental thing on TV, you said it's ridiculed. In the 60s, when I was involved in the anti-war movement, it seemed to me only one quarter, one third of the people on the picket lines and the demonstrations were really committed people. The rest were just there because it was the cool thing to do and so and so to play the guitar. Yep. A big piece of social change is what is cool. And one of the problems is being sincere and doing good stuff is not cool today. It's something, it's so embarrassing you have to...
Who was a leader and who was going to be followers? Human beings are followers.
Yeah, yes. Well, that's the whole thing about Tolstoy's The Grand Inquisitor, the great mass of people.
Well, the show I watched that night, I also see the thing about Disney on, it's called Phineas and Ferb. It's a cartoon. The two major characters, Phineas and Ferb, are creators, so the line is, so what should we do today? And they usually build something thoroughly ridiculous and impossible to build. But, I mean, the emphasis on that show is creativity. They even have a friendly relationship between a bully and a herd going on. And I think you could get more programs like that. That's a very, very popular program.
Is it?
Disney Channel.
It has a lot of viewership?
What?
It has a lot of viewership?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why
not?
Sorry.
In a way, I mean, you know, it's just pure laziness. And with all this violence and stuff, if you look at some of the violent programs, which ESI is doing, the storytelling in that, with few exceptions, is pretty darn good and lazy. It's like, oh, I have this Hollywood handbook on how to write a script. And I still remember this day taking a fiction writing course at the UW and finding it absolutely hilarious because I was writing a comedy and the teacher would always go, no matter what you're doing with your character, you can make the problems for the character darker and darker and harder and harder. And I'm writing a comedy. So, I mean, there's this attitude among the writers and the creators that it would be really have to be dark.
And the teachers.
Mm-hmm. But if you look at some of the newer programs on the television channels that are violent, they are getting darker and darker and darker.
That's true.
But, mindset, though-wise, is there's two ways to react to that or to the violence. And that is, one is to say, I am mad, they're doing this wrong, I'm pissed, I'm frustrated. I'm going to go back to my little closet. The other way just to say is, who makes the needles? And to ask, what is going on that's attractive and figure out how to make it work for you. Right? And to me, if you don't have that attitude, you're going to look at the realities of today, you're going to wind up in despair. And in despair, you psychologically retreat and try and find a lifeboat for yourself. And if we wind up with everyone trying to make lifeboats, liberals and progressives alike, we're dead. The only way to survive this challenge we have is to go back to the spirit of barn raisings. So
we have a change, including with the environmental message. A lot of the environmental message is saying gas is doomed, charcoal is doomed, nuclear power is doomed, we're not going to have much nuclear power left. And a lot of the message is, doom, 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 doom with the environmental message. And that the only way we can survive is to, find a small hole in the...
Not a big seller. Not a big seller, huh?
And it's not really going to be a big seller, but if you do something, let's be creative. We have to enter into a new world instead of saying, we have to cut everything off from this world. We have to enter this new world where we have renewable energies and look how much that can create business, et cetera, et cetera. And just, set up a creative messaging.
Well, here's my point, though. It really works well off that, Susan, and that is, that's the mind, that's what's happened so far. And people then say, if you say gloom and doom, you have no buyers, you have no takers. So let's put out a positive approach that lets you, like George Bush said, keep the American way of life just more efficiently. And that's not going to work either. So to me, the better question is, how do you find something that is going to sell, but it's not going to be in La La Land that gets you nowhere. And I think saying you have to go back and live in a cave is not, as you say, a seller. But if you say, especially to young people who aren't so much creatures of habit as we are at our age, what you say to them is, did you really enjoy being dragged back and forth to all those soccer games and music lessons and having no time to yourself? Was that all that money spent on it? Was that something that you found fun? Do you think having special family times is valuable? I think it depends. I think there has to be ways to sell the joys and the beauty of a simpler life that doesn't depend upon iPods. And to me, it's not saying have a 4G iPod that has a super battery saving thing. It's to say having time to play some kind of fun game, Monopoly game or something with the family at night.
Has worked. Monopoly for an example.
There you go. Game.
Family time. It was a game designed to show what Monopoly can do to an economy.
But anyway, you got to find a way of... We have to get to a destination that is going to be any chance of working, we have to put a nice cloth around a simpler life and a family life.
Meanwhile, we have one gym advertising, one bus advertising the gym, and the next bus coming up advertising the Big Mac.
Yeah. I like co-ops. I think co-ops are good for that kind of thing.
The cooperative housing?
People working together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm finally starting to meet Sweden the middle way.
Well, and getting back to Galen's point is, if you have a Walden 3 kind of thing so people can go visit it, because right now there's no construct of what that is. That world of a rich family life is pretty much gone. But if you have a Walden 3 where people can visit, and maybe some of these fancy stars can go and go there for a week and do reality TV shows, maybe that can redefine it. But unless we redefine what happiness is, doing it more efficient, being an efficient materialist is not going to be a destination worth trying to achieve.
I think Rose should tell you about that portion of the book she was telling me. I haven't read it.
Seven Steps?
About the Sweden. About the Sweden. And it has to do with cooperatives.
Yeah.
It was part of what they did in Sweden, and then they imported it into the United States. And if we want to see examples of this, all we have to do is travel just a little ways northward, where the Scandinavians were the dominant people who settled there, and they had all these wonderful properties that still exist and still function.
And they want
all kinds of things.
Farmers want a credit union instead of a little bit of bank.
Yeah, they have credit unions.
Will this be called?
I think it'd make a neat field trip too.
They start from a fundamental idea that everybody deserves to live a good life.
The bad casting instead of forecasting.
Well, that monopolies and profit motive should be removed from society. It's a way of cooperating so that everybody can live safely and healthfully.
I might go back to barter. Mm-hmm. Like a doctor's hours be equivalent to a librarian's hours or whatever.
That's so unusual in the world. I think most of the world is driven by
getting more than the next person.
But somehow in the 60s, the media cooperated in making being an activist, an anti-war activist, an environmental activist chic. It was cool.
It was very scared because of the 50s.
The whole academy.
I mean, look at what the Red Scare did to Hollywood in the 50s. There, it does begun to start recuperating from the Red Scare. And don't think any differently. I mean, if you see what's going on when somebody goes Hollywood after doing filming.
And there's that crazy movie Network where the woman producer was trying to get really be on the cutting edge to get the best points on the viewership scales, hired the Black Panthers, a reality show for Black Panthers.
Actually, you want a good example of marketing. I hate to recommend it, but I said the next book in the topic of marketing is The Good News Club. And it really shows our evangelical fundamentalists have been taking up marketing big time and really doing good at selling.
But they sell fear.
Is that what they're selling? Is that their primal thing?
I think so.
Fear about when you die? What's the fear?
Fear of everything. Fear of the other?
I mean, they have really started. I mean, if you read this book, they've been taking up sort of the marketing terminology that they have for going into this market versus that market, and feeding the people this and that.
Susan, what's the name of that book?
What?
What's the name of the book?
Good News Club. That's the latest one that I'm sure talks about this sort of stuff. And it is true, the evangelical fundamentalists have really taken marketing up to the next level.
What are they marketing? What are they
I think it's for themselves.
I just want to read that book, though.
I would say they're marketing, making sure that the powers that be in that field get a lot of money and as much power as they can. But I'm a cynic when it comes to Christian fundamentals. In that case, if you look at their websites, they're sort of saying, be close to God.
Atheists not welcome, right?
Marketing the religion.
Good News Club is running in elementary schools. They are running groups that get held after elementary school is done. They stand outside and offer chocolate and candy to the kids.
That makes me nervous.
They go right outside the boundary of the school property on weekdays and hand out Bibles to the kids. That's what the Good News Club do.
It's remarkable to me.
But notice, they call themselves the Good News Club.
That the Christian religion, if you read what Jesus says, how can you equate wealth with God?
Right.
Right.
It's one that should be written.
I was going to say you get it because well, yeah, it says, it's proof that God loves you.
Where's that eye of the needle?
No, but yeah, I remember the other tone, which is God has favored these people with all this wealth and money, so they can do absolutely no wrong no matter what happens.
Well, if Jefferson can cut out the Bible, so can they.
We can defeat them with the same Bible.
But, I
the
mean,
same Bible.
I'm not sort of, you know, right out about Christian fundamentalists. I'm just saying they have really, 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 they have conventions all around the country and all around the world.
You're really making us feel bad.
Every quarter, I mean, in these conventions, you know, they have hundreds of people attending these conventions. Every quarter of the year, they have a convention with, you know, 700 people attending.
There's an us and them aspect.
Two, you know, they're all missionaries with the right of God on their eyes and stuff like that. But they really, really have worked the marketing field. Marketing skills to heart, and they still sell.
In the political arena, there's a big debate going on over the last 3 or 4 years about whether Democrats are intellectualizing and the Republicans are using the same kind of technique. And I think you can, why are we keep on hollering about it? We want to do something about it. We'll be selling toothpaste too. If we don't do that on the environmental issues, we're going to be dead meat, because we keep on intellectualizing and talking about the numbers. It'll have no weight in terms of how decisions are made in this country. Now when there's so much money, enormous money on the other side.
What are we going to put on that bumper sticker?
If you can't make it three words, it's not going to sell, you know.
There are a large number of separate groups, but there's sort of an underlying group which is doing the marketing, for all these other groups. So, like, some of the conventions she went to, there she, you know, you could be a convention for selling automobiles, the way she thought it was being run.
Well, there are progressive groups, Susan, who do this for the companies do it for the political groups. The problem is it's not taking hold. And so you look upon what happened with the health bill that passed, where they pilloried the bill from day one and repeated it, because truth is repetition, repeated over and over again, and Obama just intellectualized and stood and did nothing. And he took his biggest achievement in his mind and let it be tossed down the toilet.
But I was going to sort of say that the last couple of times I've been to Fighting Bobfest and listening to the environmental groups, it seems like there's one person over there doing one thing, one group over there doing the other thing, one group over there doing that thing, and there's really no underlying marketing group to sell it to a whole bunch of people. You know, even with my emailing charity things, I get one people for the Wisconsin Rivers, one people for National Rivers.
Well, that's not fair, because on climate change, there's a lot of money being, all I know now is climate change, I'm not doing the wider issues, but there's a lot of money being spent to figure out psychologically, sociologically, primarily how to get change done. The problem, as I look at it, the problem with it is it puts bumpers around it to be sellable in the Congress today. And so those are the confines upon which to do the psychological, so it doesn't go very far. But it's, so the real criticism is not that they're not looking in that direction, it's they're not doing it in a very fundamental, productive sense, in my view.
You're a senator who believes that global warming is from sunspots for us.
Yeah.
I don't think you can blame these environmental groups. I'm a member of about 10 of them now.
I'm not blaming.
I'm just saying it's different from how fundamentals are doing. Anyway, they're doing it as well as they can. And I think the local groups have their place also. For example, as far as the rivers are concerned, the Rock River Basin has, in all of its tributaries, has its own group. And I'm particularly interested in that because Whitewater is one of the headwaters that go up here. And they're doing a very, very good job of working on their specific geographic areas.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they're doing a good job. And one of my donation things is the Wisconsin River Group. That's why I mentioned it.
And then
practically every park has its friends of. Friends of Quake Park. Pheasant Branch, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, they're all upset.
Every river, every park.
Yeah.
They get worn out with it.
It gets hard, so you have to be careful.
You could never ultimately win.
But
because
there are too many issues and too broad a theme.
There's always a new threat,
but look what happened to cigarettes, or in New York. I grew up on they passed a law to abolish leaving your dog shit on the sidewalk, and everyone said, "New York City, who's going to give a darn about that?" And it became socially unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Change can occur, and if it's not occurring, it's our fault for not thinking deeply enough about how to make that change happen.
There's another problem, and that's things like cell phones and stuff people are on all the time. They're not connecting to their neighbors, they're not connecting to people they see now and then. They're only connecting to people they don't even know. They're not listening to things outside.
Jed, our 14-year-old, has spent all dinners, and family dinners in my mind are extremely important. He was doing texting, and I said, turn off, and he's still texting. So I said, like in the old bars in Wild West, we're leaving our cell phones in the living room when we go into.
Yeah. Well, but there's a mindset there, because I was in the grocery one time, it just struck me, I've told a number of people this. I came to a place where there were two aisles crossing each other.
Yeah.
And there was a cart at each one with somebody behind it, and they're all looking down. Nobody would look anyone in the face to see who's going to move next.
Atomized society.
So I slowly moved forward, and then it broke, and it moved. But they were stuck. They could not look at each other.
It's a great metaphor, isn't it?
Yeah. Kind of horrific.
Well, New York City, that had started up that dog behavior problem, because it could have a Chautauqua about it.
Before we close, there is some optimistic notes, because I've worked in elementary schools the last few years, and kids are
in Madison or in Maroon.
I expect to find a school here in Madison. Just as a volunteer, but a seeing of teachers and aides are doing, getting kids relating to each other, communicating on the particular kindergarten or first or second grade level. But learning to pay attention to each other. When you talk to somebody, you look at them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I got them.
Well, you're right.
Mm. And you say something. And nobody can laugh at somebody for saying something stupid.
And I think watching one of the big transformative agents was something terribly simple. When these fights start breaking out, as things do in the schoolyard, was use words.
Mm-hmm.
Use words. And I look up, listen, we had a foreign exchange student one year who joined the track team at Memorial. They went to the race, and one of the kids on the team was mentally retarded, and he was on the team too, and he came in way last, and as he came in way last, everyone was cheering about how his. And when I was a kid, you were merciless. Never would have happened. And you know, some people think, in terms of evolutionary theories, the socialization that we do every day increases that level of oxytocin in the hormone that's for that mothers feel, that makes it more willing to assume like as opposed to fight, as in terms of its immediate instinctual reaction to a stress. So, yes.
And although I worked in very small children, I observed things going on in the middle school, which is a very turbulent age, but kids being polite to each other, moving smoothly down the hall, meeting each other.
Yes.
It can be done.
It needs to go further than if you were over grade two.
So they're awesome.
Hopefully. Yeah, but it requires thinking deeply about how to make fundamental change, as opposed to figuring out outcomes you want. It's the levers of deep primal change where the most work needs to be done if we're to prevail.
St. Thomas Aquinas said, preach the gospel at all times. If necessary, use words.
Whoa!
Does anyone else have a comment or a question for Peter?
Can I Please do.
Sure, Bill.
I saw on the computer that this meeting was being held today, so I thought I'd stop by and see what you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting, but does this, is humanistic society, is that the correct title?
Humanist Union of Madison.
I see. And I was just wondering what your main thrust is. I hear you today talking about the environment, which needs our help and support, no doubt about that. But is that the main thrust?
No. Usually we pick a topic of interest to humanists and discuss it, find a leader for the discussion. Often have a presentation. Today, Peter presented the morning program at Prairie Unitarian University Society, so this was just a follow-up, informal question and answer session with Peter. I was suggesting that we might get into Thomas Jefferson as a free thinker and as the creator of the Jefferson Bible, but that wasn't what Peter presented his morning program on, so it's a little different than our usual. Next month, we're going to be discussing a book called Out of the Flames, which talks about religious conflicts in Europe in the 1500s and follows the life of Michael Servetus and the conflict with John Calvin and how he was finally burned at the stake because he refused to retract his position on the Trinity and the book he wrote on that. So it'll be more typical of our Humanist Union programs.
I see. Several years ago, I took a subscription to Free Inquiry magazine, mm-hmm. and that, to my mind, is very interesting. And I look forward to the issue every month, and so I was wondering, and maybe you're answering my question, what your opinions are on religion.
We have a lot of criticisms of religion.
Yeah, well, that's the way I feel too. So
we tend not to think religion will solve everything.
Well, thank you for attending. Let's give Peter a round of applause.